There was a study that came out recently that talked about most teachers are contracted between 35 to 40 hours a week. However, most, especially public school teachers in America, are putting in close to 50 to 53 hours a week. 50 to 53. That's 10 hours of overtime we're not paid for. And many teachers are not even, are already not even earning a livable wage. Ah, this is Ty. And as you can see, we are missing one half of the 2B team. Ah, I'm here solo dolo, and only because my wonderful, my illustrious, my super educated, super learned, super hyped, the energy woman herself, Joe Ellen, is not here. Unfortunately, you know, as is with, you know, the hustle and bustle of a new year, a new school year, that is for grad school, as well as just so many moving parts in life, Joe had to take a little break, take some rest. We continue to preach and talk to you about self-care, right? We've talked about how you can't pour from an empty cup. And so we talked earlier, and I said, Joe, it's time for you to take a little rest. And she, I'm telling you, this girl is superwoman. So Joe's not here with us today, but that's all right. I'm going to come to you guys live and direct. I'm checking in, reporting live from right outside of Boston at the moment. And I'm just so glad that you're here with me, all right? As you know, if you don't know, if it's your first time tuning in, checking in, 2B stands for Two Black Educators. We are seeking to uplift and elevate anything and all things that celebrate Black excellence. And speaking of Black excellence, I want to stop real quick and talk about this lovely gear. I got on some new threads. It says teach right up my alley as a teacher. And I got this from Go Ahead Teach. So if you want to catch this thread, and it comes in a few different colorways, so smooth, so silky, and fits good too, even on this pandemic body. Go ahead over to @GoAheadTeach on Instagram. This teacher has a phenomenal shop with so many great threads. And then, of course, as always, I got my headband on from Afreak Wraps. So if you want to check her out, go over to Afreak Wraps, another Black-owned business. You know that's what we support over here, Black-owned businesses. But I want to welcome y'all, man. I'm so happy to see y'all here in the building. This is season 2, episode 8. For those of y'all keeping count, season 2, episode 8. And we're talking hot topics in education, the hotness. Everybody out there doing the Busset Challenge, you about to drop down on some heat, but education style, okay? So I'm going to come to you guys live with a few things. I just want to remind you that, you know, we're winding down season 2. Joe will be back in our next episode, which will be 2 weeks from now, and we'll have a few guests coming on. I've got some people lined up that are innovating, that are elevating, especially in terms of how we are thinking about doing online school, right? Because so many of us have talked about we have to do something different virtually. It can't be the same as sitting in a classroom, you know, in front of a chalkboard with a pencil and paper like it's 1975. So we have some people that are going to come on to tell us how they're innovating that space of virtual learning. It's going to be a fantastic episode. Look forward to that coming up in the near future. And I want to jump right in. I'm not going to hold you guys tonight. I'm not going to keep you too long because I want to drop the heat on you, and then we're going to back away from the fire. You know what I'm saying? Drop the heat and then back away from the fire. Let's jump right in. Let's start right here. Educators, let me ask you a question. Are you taking the COVID-19 vaccine? Are you? Are you taking the COVID-19 vaccine? Be honest with yourself. Are you taking the vaccine? Now, some educators I've heard say, well, I'm taking Moderna's because it was created at the hands of a Black woman. Okay. Some educators said they're rocking with Pfizer because that was the first one to be approved for public consumption. Some educators said, you can miss me with that vaccine now. No way, no how. And listen, I don't know where I am in that just yet, but I do know that there's a lot of educators that are fighting against schools pushing us back into the classroom full time in person, especially when there's still not the right amount of supports in place to make sure that we're keeping not only the students, but the teachers, the staff, the support staff, the administration safe. And see, that's what's lost in all of this. When all the media outlets and the parents, and the community stakeholders that are saying kids need to go back to school, as teachers, we understand that. We know that, you know, parents are used to using school as a daycare service, as a child service, and that's fine. We get that. We understand that there's a lot of students that are struggling learning virtually. Online learning is not their best. It's not the best atmosphere for them to engage with the content, for them to retain the information, to push forward their learning. We understand that, right? We also understand that there's just a routine that our bodies are used to, getting up in the morning, going out, and then being able to sit in the classroom and engage with folks, because as human beings, we're communal, right? We're looking for that interaction. We understand that. But at the same time, in the same light, should teachers put their lives in danger just in the name of education? Just in the name of learning? You tell me. Are you taking the vaccine? I know some teachers that stood up and said, I need to speak on it for a second. I'm not being pushed back into the classroom without a fight. And if you've heard in the news, one of the reasons why this is a hot topic is because in Chicago, just yesterday, teachers refused to go into the buildings and instead opted to work from home. So not a strike per se. They still worked, but they were supposed to go back in person. And they said, no. Hell no, we won't go. Not I. And the teachers talked about how they say they want the COVID-19 vaccine before they head back into the classroom. And here's a quote I want to share with you guys from NBC News article that's titled, Teachers Say They Want the COVID-19 Vaccine Before They Go Back Into the Classroom. And the quote says, community spread is still so high in Chicago, and so many people are sick and dying. I don't know how to keep myself safe in an old building with so many people. And that was Kirsten Roberts, who's a preschool teacher at the Bertano Math and Science Academy on the city's northwest side. She said, I don't understand why we have to risk our lives, and we're so close to the vaccine. So Kirsten's ready to take the vaccine. She's ready. Give me the vaccine, she said. But she said, but for one thing, I'm not going back into the classroom without the vaccine. That's what she said. I will go back and teach, but I'm not doing it without the vaccine. And here's the thing I want to know. I'm thinking about, and I'm curious, because one of the things that's been brought up, Joe and I have talked about this on previous episodes, is that one of the issues of pushing teachers back to the classroom is that there really is no contact tracing when the students do not have to inform the teachers or the school of a positive test. Right? You heard that, right? There's no system in place that says the students have to inform the teachers, have to inform the school of a positive test. They're supposed to. We would like them to. But if we go on break, let's say for us in the Northeast especially, we have February break coming up, and the students and their families, they go out and travel, and they come in contact with folks that have the virus, and maybe they're asymptomatic, and then they come back into the classroom. Maybe they've had a few symptoms, a fever, a small cough, few body aches, but they thought it's winter time. It's just probably just a cold. Maybe I have the flu. And so they may take a few days off from school, but they don't notify the school. But in the meantime, in between time, everyone that they've come in contact with has now potentially been infected with the COVID-19 virus. But you want me to teach in that atmosphere? And something that quote brought up that Kirsten talked about is there are so many old and dilapidated buildings across the country where school is taking place, especially in major cities, Boston, Chicago, New York, buildings where the maintenance, especially of the air filtration systems, have been put off and put on the back burner for decades, not years, decades. There are schools that still don't have AC. No AC. So imagine that. No AC. All we have is old rickety windows. It's below freezing outside, but it's time to go back in the building, go back to school. This is how y'all want to send teachers back. And what makes matters worse is that we have organizations like the CDC, who many of us believe in. We know that they do good work, right? Especially my STEM teachers, they believe in the science. And the CDC came out this week and said, all of their research says that they recommend reopening, that all schools across the country should reopen as soon as possible, ASAP. Now, they also suggested that there be mask wearing and other safeguards in place. And we understand that school is, for the most part, a controlled environment. But in the same token, why is it that we're willing to put teachers' lives on the line? Why are our lives dispensable? Why are teachers' lives at the point where it's more about the economy, it's more about commerce, that we're willing to say, teachers, listen, do your best to stay safe, but we got to send these kids back. If you catch COVID, take a few days off, but come right back. And in some cases, the teachers will catch COVID and their administrators will email them and say, hey, do you have a lesson plan you can still submit? Do you think you can still teach virtually even though you're at home, potentially facing a life-threatening disease? Y'all think I'm making this up, but this is real life examples. I've heard from teachers personally that they have showed their principals a positive COVID-19 test, been at home in recovery, and their administrators will email them, call them, text them saying, hey, you know, I know you're home sick, but you know, we have some parents that want to talk to you. Do you think you'd jump on a Zoom call? Huh? Or they'll call and say, hey, you know, the sub doesn't really have any work for the students. You think you can send in a little lesson for the week? What? Administrators call you and say, listen, I know, you know, you're in quarantine and all, but, you know, grades are due this week. You think you could jump on the system and submit those grades? As if recovering from COVID-19 isn't tough enough. When I'm supposed to be out in recovery, taking care of my mental health and my body, especially, I have to be concerned about work. Why don't we see the problem with that? And here's the other part. Here's the other part. It really exemplifies what's a said but unsaid in some places. Expectation of teachers is that you are expected to work beyond your contracted hours. COVID-19 or not, you are expected to work beyond your contracted hours. Most folks, you clock in at this time, you clock out, and yeah, maybe you go home and talk to your partner about, you know, how your work day was, but you're not at home doing work. You're not taking home work on the weekends, every night, over breaks, on the holidays, lesson planning, grading, emailing, contacting parents, doing spreadsheets, reading through data. There was a study that came out recently that talked about most teachers are contracted between 35 to 40 hours a week. However, most, especially public school teachers in America, are putting in close to 50 to 53 hours a week. 50 to 53. That's 10 hours of overtime we're not paid for. And many teachers are already not even earning a livable wage. So I circle back to this. Are you taking the COVID-19 vaccine? Are you sure? Are you sure it's worth it? Side effects and all. And are you doing it because you need to get back in the building to keep your job? Or are you doing it to protect yourself because you believe this is the solution to what our country needs so that we can get back to some level of normalcy in terms of being able to move about in the way, in the manner in which we used to? I tell you, I don't know. I'm undecided. That's what I'm going to leave it right now. I'm undecided. But if I do take the vaccine, it's going to be Moderna. That's what I do know. If I do take the vaccine. I see Joe's checking in live. See, she's checking in live. See, Joe, now listen, I just preached. I said, you know, you can't be working when you're supposed to be in recovery. But Joe just hit us right here. She said, facts. Why are teachers not a priority for vaccination? But yes, we're pushing back into the building. Why? That's a good question. That's a really good question. Why are teachers not being prioritized for the vaccine, but we're being prioritized to go back into an unsafe environment? You tell me. I see we've got a comment here also from my good friend Thomas Oakley. He said, I'm confused. The vaccination is for everyone's health, not just for your job. I hear you on that, Oakley. I hear you. But there are some concerns with the vaccine. This vaccine was rolled out faster and quicker than any vaccine in history. That's number one. Then, as we also know, this country has a history of providing false vaccinations to Black people specifically. So there's a distrust there amongst the Black community, specifically in America, and when it comes to vaccines. And then third, there's still so many unknowns with the vaccine. Some people are reporting, which is not being reported widely enough, of severe after effects from the vaccine that seem to be just as bad as catching COVID. Body aches, fevers, stiffness, nausea, diarrhea. It's starting to sound like a Pepto-Bismol commercial when you listen to the side effects of taking the COVID-19 vaccine. And so we just don't know what are the long-term effects of this vaccine. So many folks are willing to take it, but there are still a lot of folks who are saying, I'm not so sure just yet. And so I think it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time for educators especially to come around and say, I'm willing to put that needle in my arm and not be completely certain that this is what's going to help me in the long term. I want to transition because I told you, I promised you, like a great teacher, I'm watching the clock. And I told you I'm not going to keep you long today. And so another hot topic that I want to bring up and talk about, and I just, let me get my mind right for this. Woo! Get my chakras. We have to talk about former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Lord, 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 Lord. Teachers, educators, I ask you, what is Betsy DeVos's legacy? First off, I want you to do this. Seriously. All my educators that are listening, I want you to stop. Think about this. No matter if you're walking your dog, you're riding in the car, if you're just listening in the house on the couch, take a second and think, what is one thing that you can remember that Betsy DeVos did, that she actually accomplished? Oh, it's going to be a long pause. It's going to be a long pause because it is hard to really understand. It's really hard to come up with, what did she actually do? What did she do? Besides be polarizing, besides being divisive, unproductive, besides taking away protections from several communities of students, specifically transgender students, what did Betsy DeVos do? I see a comment from Oakley. He said, she helped us by letting us all learn how much money means in politics. Well, hello, somebody. I hear you on that, Oakley. But seriously, there are so many teachers I've talked to and I've asked them, what did Betsy DeVos do? And you know the answer is, I don't know. Because we cannot fathom what is it that she actually did. Well, here, I want to roll down a list of a few of her accomplishments. And I'm going to make it brief because we don't want to spend too much time on Betsy. For one, Betsy DeVos is famously known as being the person who suggested that guns belong in some schools. You remember that? That's right. She suggested that some schools should have guns. And in a weird way, she talked about how some schools need guns to protect themselves against grizzly bears, I believe it was, which was very strange. I won't even touch that topic, that subtopic, because we've long established that more guns in any sense does not help the problem. It only fuels it. Then, back in May of 2016, the Obama Justice and Education Department, they sent the letters to school districts advising that students should be allowed to use the facilities, including bathrooms, that were consistent with their gender identity, right? That's when we began to see unisex bathrooms, or we began to see genderless bathrooms, right? A lot of college campuses have adopted that. Some public schools, K through 12. Betsy DeVos wiped that out. Mm-mm, no. Transgender students, you don't matter. Mm-mm. We're not worried about you. That's basically what she said. She took away protections that would allow students to feel welcomed, have a sense of belonging in their school atmosphere. Why? Who is it hurting that a student is using a bathroom that they identify with? And ultimately, if they feel more comfortable at school, doesn't that ultimately lead to higher student achievement? Y'all tell me if I'm wrong. I see JP's in the comments again. She says right here, Betsy DeVos proved that white privilege is real, had no business holding that title. What qualifications did she have? Well, that's another topic for another day. Because we know that white dominant culture allows folks who are unqualified, who are unproven, unexperienced, to somehow find themselves in positions of elevation, of promotion, even though there was a set list of requirements, prerequisites. Supposedly, you had to have this, 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 and this to get this job. At least that's the list that they go by when you're black or brown, when you have a melanated skin. But white dominant culture allows you to have one or none of those qualifications and still somehow be hired and not even be looked at as an issue. But I digress. What is Education Secretary Betsy DeVos's legacy? I'll tell you what it is. Back to Thomas Oakley's point earlier, it's that DeVos formulated a plan to use the federal tax code not to support public schools, no, to support private school scholarships. Private school? Now, I don't have any problem with any parent choosing private school, choosing a charter school, religious school. You should have that option. You should have that choice. But we have to understand that that's not the majority of the experiences of the options that are presented to students across America, especially students in marginalized communities, especially Black students, especially Latinx students, especially students who come from low socioeconomic spaces. They don't have the option to go to private school. And hell, some private schools won't even accept them. So what good does it do to increase private school scholarships? You tell me. Let me tell you one other thing Betsy DeVos did. Betsy DeVos, she tried to promote this $5 billion tax credit plan, not only to help children in private schools, but she had the nerve to refer to the initiative as education freedom. My God. Tell me how it is freeing to throw more money into private schools and to not into public schools. And don't get me started. I'm not done, because when we think about how she tried to fund private schools, here's what she did for public schools. Back when the pandemic started, right? Back in March or April of last year of 2020, Congress got together and they said, we need to send K through 12 schools a lot of money. We need to provide more funding. In fact, we need to send them more than $13 billion, billion would it be, to cover the costs related to COVID-19. Right, so that schools could prepare with equipment upgrades, with maintenance to their buildings, with masks, with hand sanitizers, with better sanitation. Congress said we need to send more than $13 billion. Betsy DeVos said, hold up. She said public schools should have to use more of that money to pay for services like tutoring, transportation, and you guessed it, private school students. Betsy, what do they do to that? Just imagine Congress got together and said, we need to send public schools more than $13 billion. And the person in charge of public schools said, no, we don't need that money. In fact, We should take that money, divvy it up, and schools should have to pay for tutoring, transportation, and private school students. Why would schools need more money for transportation when the students are sitting at home? Betsy, come on. I would say you're better than that, but we don't know. And here's probably the most, or one of the most egregious efforts that Betsy put forth that, and I almost forgot about this one until I looked it up. And there's a fantastic NPR article that I want to shout out quickly that's called Education Secretary Betsy DeVos Will Be Remembered. That was written at the end of last year. You guys should check that out. I'll drop the link in the chat as well. And in it, it details how Betsy sought to write new regulations around Title IX that aimed at beefing up protections for accused college students. You heard that right. Not for the victims of, let's say, sexual assault or rape in college. No, no. She wanted to beef up the protections for accused college students. And so much so that it would allow the representative of that student, so the accused representative, so the accused lawyer, it would give them the ability to cross-examine their accuser in real time. What? So let's just say, let's use me as an example. I accuse you of raping me, of committing sexual assault, and Betsy DeVos argued that we need to provide protections where, because I accused you, you should be able to, as I'm in the midst of, I'd imagine, trying to recover from the traumatic event, the devastating event, the life-altering event that had just occurred to me, your representative, your lawyer should be able to cross-examine me in real time. As if what I just went through isn't hard enough. Sometimes I wonder about Betsy DeVos when you see the steps that she took. Many of them were where she was looking to take away protections, as I mentioned before, for transgender students. And we know that even though it's not all, the majority of sexual assault and rape cases are men towards women. And as a woman, why would you want to take away protections for women who are accusing men more times than not of sexual assault? I don't understand that. As a woman, why would Betsy DeVos stand for that? Let alone her title as Secretary of Education. As a woman, why would you stand for that? Doesn't add up. Now, I want to be fair before I move on from Betsy. There were a few things that Betsy did that she got right. A few things. She did waive K-12 testing requirements during the pandemic. That is one thing that she did encourage, is that we should, as schools across America, not hold students to standardized testing requirements during the pandemic. So that's one thing that she got right. But you almost wonder if that really came from her, if that was someone else that was telling her that's what she should say and do. She also was a part of a group that assisted in correcting the errors that were happening in regards to the Teach Grant. And so if you don't know what the Teach Grant is, many teachers, first of all, teachers have tremendous amounts of student loan debt. It just has become a part of the game, because teachers have been required to, in many places, many states, many districts, not only do you need your bachelor's degree, then in some cases, if you did not go to school for education specifically, there are hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars of tests that you have to take to obtain your certification. Sometimes you need to also take some sort of post-secondary coursework, which will then be out of pocket. And then to top that off, in places like New York City and others, a master's degree is required. And it's not as if these districts are giving out full scholarships for students, for teachers to become students again and go back to school for this degree. So teachers, if you know any teachers, ask them how much student loan debt they have, and you'll be shocked. You shouldn't be surprised though, but you'll be shocked. So one thing that Betsy DeVos did get correct is that The TEACH grant, which was a program meant to pay the college bills of new teachers who promised to work in high need schools. When she took office, it was unfairly hurting teachers with debts because there would be small paperwork mistakes. A missing signature here, an incorrect date here, right? So small, very small, minuscule paperwork errors were keeping teachers from being able to obtain a TEACH grant. And in fact, it really had become a burden. And so what she has done is she worked with the Department of Education to improve the program. And she created a path to be able to ultimately help more than, I want to say 7,000 teachers, if not more, shed their debts. So we can't say Betsy was all bad, but she was close. But ultimately, here's where Betsy DeVos's legacy lies. Similar to her boss, her former boss, 45. Her legacy really lies in her response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The COVID-19 pandemic, by all accounts, is one of the most devastating and disruptive events in history, specifically in U.S. education. There are school districts across the country that still haven't been back to full-time in-person schooling since last March. Chicago, Boston, plenty of other areas around the country that yet and still have not gone back to in-person schooling. And Betsy DeVos, she was one of the forefront people saying immediately, send kids back to school. Before we knew all of the ins and outs, the devastation that COVID-19 would bring about onto our country, before we knew all the answers, and we still don't, she was saying send the kids back to school. And that $13 billion I talked about that Congress sent out as part of the CARES Act, she was not in support of it, as I mentioned. So even when the government said we need to send money to schools, she said, they'll be all right. Many schools are still struggling, not having enough funding. But her most painful moment, and I remember this vividly, because the pandemic has given us time to sit down and reflect and just hear things and take it in, is that back in the summer, June or July of 2020, I remember her at a press conference with President Trump, and she said, all schools should reopen in the fall. But here's the key part. All schools should reopen in the fall, regardless of whether or not they met the CDC safety recommendations. Talk about not offering assistance, protection, understanding. What did she do? What did she do? Mind you, this is the same lady who, one of her big pushing points was charter schools and private schools and how local control was important. But yet and still, she stood on the stage and said, everybody should be going back to school, even if the schools don't meet the CDC safety regulations. Open up the schools. And she also stood by President Trump when he talked about how if schools didn't open, he could cut off federal funds to schools, which, as we know, was a lie. My only hope as I move forward away from talking about Betsy DeVos and let her ride off into the abyss with 45, with Agent Orange, is that her legacy can be undone quick, fast, in a hurry of the things that she was able to accomplish by our new Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona. And certainly in the episode to come, Joe and I will discuss what our mandates are for him, what it is that we need for him to be able to do, so that way he can come in and actually make a positive impact on our school system. The first thing has to be helps teachers to earn a livable wage. We have teachers literally in this country with master's degrees that are making less than $50,000. $50,000 with a master's degree and student loan debt straddling them. That's got to be his number one. Number one, if not number two, 1A, take care of teachers' wages. Teachers, a field of teaching is some of the most highly educated of all people in America, and yet often some of the least recognized. And that's not to say that other groups like police and firefighters, that they shouldn't be recognized. Recognize them too. But teachers are often over-criticized, underpaid, and underappreciated. With that, y'all, I just want to say thank you for tuning in today. I know I went live solo dolo without my home girl, without my 2B co-host, Joe Angela, when she's on her activism, Joellen when she's on her professional, and JoJo from the block when she's on her thug-ish. But I appreciate y'all rocking with me this week. Season 2, episode 8. We'll be back in 2 weeks. As I mentioned, we've got some guests lined up, some more hot topics to talk about. And more importantly, we'll be continuing with the efforts to fight against racial inequities, racial injustice, specifically in schools, the inequities that our students face. Because I know Joe, like me, we've dedicated our careers, our lives even, to elevating the issues that are concerning Black and Brown students and finding ways to defeat poverty and kick poverty's ass, because education is a tool, it's a pathway out of poverty, and that's what we see it as. All right, y'all, till next time, be good to yourself, be true to yourself, and remember to educate yourself. Peace.